Warning. Some listeners may find the contents of this show disturbing. Parental discretion is advised.
You know, there are people out there that are seen as a nuisance by some and are seen as heroes by others. The gentleman I will be speaking to, Keith Mann, is from the Animal Liberation Front, and he has a new book out called From Dusk Till Dawn. Well, that's, you know, nothing unusual that someone who is part of a group writes a book about it. But he is an animal rights activist, you know, since the early days of his life, really, and has spent 14 years in prison for damages to property. I think the important thing is to remember that even though he spent 14 years in prison, he never hurt anyone physically. It was all property-related charges. But he went to prison for property-related charges, and these property-related charges, apparently, were done against people that work in the with animal industry. So they would, you know, I don't know, wreck some laboratories or some cars and all that kind of stuff. I have to talk to him about that. In any case, he will be my guest, and I'm glad because he's, you know, he's quite in demand with regards to doing interviews, and because when he read what the show is about, animal welfare / world conservation, he immediately said, "Look, you know, I'm going to do this." So thanks for that. I'm absolutely delighted that we can make a difference that way, because even though I haven't spoken to him previously, it will give us an insight not only into the mind of, I mean, I would consider myself an animal rights activist, but I'm also a coward in the sense that I wouldn't, you know, I certainly wouldn't go down the path of, you know, damaging or, you know, something, or being violent. Well, you know, never say never, so I don't want to dig a hole here for myself. But anyway, I will be talking to this gentleman when we come back. This is coming up now. It's a new song by the Pet Shop Boys from their new album, Yes. And yes, you should buy the album. It's absolutely brilliant. The song is called Did You See Me Coming? And right after that, I will be talking to Keith Mann from the Animal Liberation Front, who has a new book out, From Dusk Till Dawn. This is the Pet Shop Boys.
Oh,
pictures and more, check the blog www.wildtimeradio.blogspot.com.
You are listening here to the Pet Shop Boys. Did you see me coming from the new album? Yes, it's a great album. I always love, you know, much more into British music than into American music. I'm joined now by Keith Mann, who is a little blob here, who has turned into a celebrity, probably for all, not probably the wrong reasons, but you know how the media is these days. Keith, how do you deal with the demand of the media on you these days?
Well, I answer their questions. I want to speak to the media. I want people to understand what it is we're doing to the animal kingdom on this planet. And I have now, because of the profile I've been given, because of the actions I've carried out and the arrests I've been subjected to and the prison sentence, I've been given a profile, and I've got a platform now to speak about issues that most people would rather not speak about. Many people within the Animal Liberation Front, for example, obviously want to remain anonymous and carry out their actions.
Absolutely, yeah. Understandably, because, you know, the thing about this is, I think, one of the reasons why they gave you 14 years is not necessarily because of your actions, but I think it sent a message to the activists, and it probably was intended to scare them off.
Oh, absolutely. It's about controlling populations. This is why they do these things to people. It's a political sentence. They don't want people challenging the system, challenging the status quo as it is. And I mean, the irony is that they forced me out of the dead of night, if you like, and into the daylight, so I can speak to the public about these issues.
It backfired quite well. But I mean, to be quite honest, I mean, you did pay a price for these things. I actually mentioned this before I had you here on air, that when you went to prison, it was really all property damage related. It was not violence related, because a lot of people think, you know, oh yeah, there you have these activists that exhume graves and whatever, you know, kill 100,000 people. You're not a terrorist. Yet you have been labelled as such.
Well, I tend to, my philosophy is, if the media say one thing, turn it on its head, and you're getting close to the truth. Mm-hmm. Everything is so distorted, and this approach about attacking animal rights activists as being violent is ludicrous. It's probably one of the least violent communities in our society, you know. People, I don't consume dairy products because I abhor the violence of dairy farming. You know, I'm not going to inflict that kind of violence on a living being so I can satisfy my stomach. So I'm certainly not going to start using violence against people if I've got that kind of mentality. And that's how it is for most animal rights people. So when the accusers are being violent, well, turn it round and you get very close to the truth. Animal rights activists are opposed to violence wholeheartedly, and will do anything to avoid it. So.
Yeah, it's just interesting to say that, because, you know, when people hear about, I mean, you know, again, it's all hyped up, and even we talk about it now, you know, the 14 years in prison and blah, blah, blah. People automatically think, oh, yeah, Jesus, what has he done? You know, but it's just important to make that point. And as you rightly say, it is really about highlighting the plight of our animal kin, and it is us humans, us non-animal, So it is interesting how people defend it. It's I always say to people that I find it quite arrogant to just say, like, you know, I can use them for my needs. But I remember I read an interview with you on the internet here, where you were saying that one of the hardest things for you wasn't being in prison; it was being shut off and not being able to do what you were used to be doing. How do you cope with a new situation like that?
You just have to. We have a great capacity for dealing with extreme circumstances, there's no doubt about it. And I hear a lot of people say, they're not prepared to act or to take a risk to rescue an animal or to expose some kind of animal exploitation because they're afraid of the consequences, because they couldn't deal with prison. Well, you do deal with prison. You just have to deal with it. You adapt. And the truth is, I had a huge amount of support. It was a long prison sentence, but I always expected a prison sentence. And once you've dealt with the initial shock of it, it is quite easy to deal with, and we do have an amazing support network within the animal rights movement. You know, wonderful people who aren't able or prepared themselves to go to prison spend a lot of time and energy supporting those young people who have taken those risks and who have gone to prison. So they do make it very easy. This community we are in of people who do care and who are seeing the bigger picture, they do a lot to support those colleagues who have fallen and have gone to prison, and it made a big difference for me to have that support. And I always knew I was coming out. This is the other thing. If you're an animal in a cage in a laboratory or a factory farm, that's it. You're not going anywhere unless somebody is brave enough to come and rescue you.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing is, like, you know, just to let our listeners know, what are the things that you did? I remember in the beginning it was all sort of quite harmless. You were just standing in the field with one of these horns to distract the animals that were supposed to hunt the fox.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't illegal, actually, back then, was it?
No, absolutely not. No, they've changed the law to make that illegal. It's funny because those people who kill the foxes, who inflict this extreme violence on a daily basis on wild animals, that's perfectly legal. But you stand in a field and blow a hunting horn to try and stop them doing that, and suddenly you're breaking the law. How twisted is that?
I mean, that actually shows you, you know, the state of mind people are in. I mean, now in the UK you have the fox hunting ban, which again is disputed at the minute. So people will always try to get that back, and they say things like, you know, it's our tradition and all this kind of stuff. It's also a tradition of the British to stand up for their rights. I know that you had an animal right before you had human rights.
Yep.
1890 something. So it is a bit easy to say, look, you know, don't you fight against us because you're against our traditions. I think what is clear, what you made clear through all your actions there, is that tradition or not, it's just not right. But how did you get into it?
Well, I discovered a slaughterhouse. I found the truth that had been hidden from me from my formative years. I had no idea that we were doing these things to animals. I'd never made the connection. But it's only when I did that then I had to act, and it did take over my life. I was so appalled by what I found we were doing, and it has driven me ever since, and I will continue to do it forever and a day. And to take it back one step, my firm belief is that it is our tradition. We are evolutionary, civilized. We are decent people. We treat others with respect and with humanity. But over the last few hundred years, we've been corrupted by those with the power that they have wielded over us to behave like savages. It is our tradition to behave nicely and with compassion and respect for the other animal kingdom, the rest of the animal kingdom. It just happens this idea has been corrupted by these people who gained control of our societies and have made us believe that the right way forward is violence, 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 and more cruelty.
And it's also interesting because, you know, the logical conclusion to this would be, I had a sociologist here on the show once. He said, look, you know, politicians by trade, they follow the money. You know, they don't follow their hearts necessarily. So, but the animal liberation movement as such, you have, I mean, you know, when people say all these terms, you know, like you command an army, I mean, number-wise, you actually do.
Right.
A lot of people are drawn to your kind of, I mean, I wouldn't even call it work, it's a passion, you know. Tell me a bit about the things that sort of got you into trouble. What were the things you were doing? To damage property, whatever they call it.
Well, going back to where I started, when I first found this building, I was being nosy as a child, and I used to wonder why there were these lorry loads of animals keep travelling by me and down these country lanes. Where were they going? So I had a look one day, and these lanes went nowhere. They were going to a slaughterhouse. And it was a logical progression for me. I saw this thing happening. I stopped eating meat instantly. I tried to tell other people about it, and I've continued to do that. But it wasn't always enough. It wasn't quick enough. So my thinking was, okay, if those lorries aren't working, there are no lorries to take those animals to that building to kill them, that slows the process down.
Mm.
And this is the philosophy of the Animal Liberation Front, economic sabotage to interfere with the mechanics of these vile processes that these animals are going through. And that was one of the offences I was later imprisoned for many years on, was the sabotage of vehicles, these trucks that were taking the animals to the slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
Very simple actions that caused a great deal of damage and raised the issue, get people to talk about these issues.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the media was on the bandwagon quick enough to all these things.
We'd had many, many protests at these places, and not a word was being said in the media, but the minute somebody caused some damage, something photographic, if you like, they all want to talk about it. So that was the thinking. That was where I was at. And many other people are still pursuing that kind of philosophy, that mentality, that we have to raise these issues come what may, and it doesn't matter what the media say about how terrible
what I really like about now it's about using the media and why not, and one of your posters, there's this guy, you know, whoever that is, you know, with a mask on, you know, trying to be anonymous, with a white rabbit in his arm, and it says spot the terrorist. So you're using these terms these days. Do you think over the years has it all slowed down, or is it as strong as it was when you started it? How does the movement look these days? Are people more into talking? Are things now faster? Is there improvement? Just tell me a bit about your view on the situation at the moment.
Well, I know when I first went to prison, I think it was early 1990s. I was receiving correspondence, supporting letters from America, mostly from this country, the odd one from Europe perhaps, and a little bit further afield. But within 10 years on, I was in prison again. I was sent back to prison again for rescuing some mice from a laboratory in Hampshire where they're testing Botox.
Mm.
I was getting correspondence. I got correspondence from all over the world. An incredible shift in this thinking from Russia, from the Far East, from Australia, New Zealand, all these different parts, masses from Europe, huge build-up of consciousness in Europe. And in all other parts of the world, it's quite immense. It is quite encouraging to see that there is this mentality going, especially amongst the young. You know, the new generations aren't accepting this mentality that we have to inflict violence at every opportunity to satisfy our stomachs, our desires for some sporting activity. It is changing, there's no doubt about it. And there are actions now, some big actions carried out in Russia, for example, where, you know, 20 years ago you'd have no concept that this could be happening. These people are putting their lives on the line.
Yeah. There's even a guy on Facebook that I have never heard of this, who is an animal rights activist in Egypt.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I just sort of, you know, Googled it. You Google Egypt and animal rights and you get these blank pages. You know, so and that's brilliant. It's a start. I mean, you know, it's much easier for me being German, you know, loudmouth, big guy, you know, and doing it here in Europe in the 21st century. But I reckon, like, you know, in a place like Egypt, you know, it might not be as easy as it is for us Europeans.
No, you've got to have a great deal of admiration for these people, yeah, especially in countries where human rights are big issues, as they are in many countries. But it is very encouraging to see. We get correspondence from all over the world now from people who are trying to form new groups to raise these issues and bring the issue home in their countries. So, yeah, there's a lot changed. We have this quintessential English mentality about being nice to animals that everybody talks about, the nation of animal lovers, which... I do challenge to a bigger... That mentality, attitude has spread all over the world now, and there are some very powerful activists in many, many countries now.
It's also interesting, you know, when this is being said. I mean, you know, I always have to make sure I phrase this nice, because I've been living here in Ireland for 9 years, and I love the Irish. But when I go to the UK, what I do is, you know, this is my sort of rock star life, the radio stuff, but I'm a holistic animal healer. So I do work with animals, and I specialize in traumatized animals. Sort of the animals have been beaten and abused and all that kind of stuff. And just try to get them back on track, you know, with spiritual work. The minute you enter the UK, from my point of view, at least there is a consciousness about these things. When I do canine massage, and when I do canine massage in the UK, that's just a given. Okay, he does canine massage, brilliant. Over here it's like, are you gay? You know, so we don't have that here. So my sort of my awareness raising in Ireland is much harder. I have a lot of guests from the UK, and I sometimes even run into trouble because this is community radio, so it should have a community angle. And I said, look, you know, everything I studied, I had to study it abroad.
Sure.
So it is about bringing it home to a way. But I understand where you come from, being seeing what you are seeing, and then being up against these huge economic issues that you have there. It's not like, you know, I mean, when you go to laboratory, there's loads of money involved in there. So I understand it that you challenge it. If there is something, let's just say you they will give you 30 seconds to say what you want to say. What's the worst thing that happens to animals these days, and what do you think we should do about it?
Oh, there's a question. Well, for an individual animal, whatever circumstances they're in, if they're being exploited, that is the worst experience they will ever go through.
Yeah.
But on the scale, on the big scale of things, what we're doing through the meat industry and the dairy industry to consume these vast numbers of animals is, for me, quite abhorrent. I mean, there are many, many things that we were doing to animals in laboratories, for example, but the one thing that most people can impact upon is this holocaust of violence that we're inflicting on farm animals, as they are. And the easiest way to resolve that is to stop consuming them. You know, very easy for anybody to do that. There are many good alternatives available now, natural products that aren't being processed. The idea that human beings are still like suckling on a mother's milk.
I mean, yeah, we're not weaned. It's interesting, you know. It's not healthy for a mammal to not be weaned, and we're not weaned, isn't it?
It doesn't make any sense. It's not good for us, and it's certainly not good for the calf, which is taken from its mother so we can drink its milk. So these are really vile processes. The worst thing you can do to any female animal is take its baby away from it at a few days of age. And this attitude, this approach, is coming back on us. We're not doing these things in isolation. Inflicting this violence is having a direct impact on human societies, whether we like it or not. It is part of a cycle, and we put that violence into the system, and it comes back to us. So we need to reduce and stop this approach, this level of violence, this mentality we've got to other beings, and start moving ourselves forward and evolving into the beings that we're meant to be.
Yeah. It's also interesting, you know, this is, you know, over the years with the internet and everything, we have become sort of a global community. And, you know, even when you just watch social networking sites like MySpace or Facebook, you see all these people saying, like, you know, fuck the Japanese, don't go to China. You know, and there may be a reason for this. I mean, you know, the media industry in China is absolutely horrendous, and I had the pleasure to talk to Animals Asia about that a lot. But I think it really is apparent that people have problems at home. You know, I mean, when you watch YouTube and people, you know, even when you say like it's just a joke and people do turkey boning and all this kind of stuff. So the disrespect, and a lot of people, what we find here when we talk to them. You know, when I go to Tesco's or whatever you have here, to me, the frozen section is a big morgue.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and people don't get it.
No.
They don't see it, but, you know, because I'm only vegan for a few years, I understand that. It took me ages to get it.
Yeah, it's funny, but, I mean, it's becoming easier now, and there is this attitude that human consciousness is evolving now. People are starting to wake up because of the natural cycles and understand what's happening in the world. And it's incumbent upon anybody who cares about animals, for example, to raise these issues as often as possible.
Yeah.
People, these are living beings in these packets. They're not just pieces of meat. It was a living being only a few hours before, and it needs to be treated with respect and compassion. And if we don't, we aren't going to move on as a society.
And it's also, you know, when I mean, what happens now is like that's also very cleverly done from the side of the from the people that still want to use them and want to stay and want to keep the industry alive. It's like that I read in the papers that they're trying to get to sort of genetically modify cows so they don't feel pain. And you kind of read this, and it's really like, you know, it's a really sort of a science report. And they would say, look, you know, if you don't feel pain, you know, what's the difference then, you know, in using sort of stem cells and using pain-free cows?
They really are out of control. We do have to take control back because it doesn't stop with animals, does it? These people are doing the same to human beings as well. It's not, you know, animals aren't being abused and there it stops, it goes on.
Exactly. And you know, the funny thing really is, or the tragic thing is, that we know that animal abuse is an indicator crime.
Absolutely.
So I mean, people have to really wake up to saying, like, you know, when a 12-year-old tortures a cat to death, there's something probably wrong with him.
Indeed.
You know, and let's talk about your book. It's funny, you know, you call it From Dusk Till Dawn. So I like the title. The problem that I have with it, apparently, is when I Google it, it's very difficult to get you because of the movie with the same name, you know. How can people get the book? Does it have an ISBN number? Did you find a publisher, or how do people get the book?
Well, we self-published, but it is online on the fromdusktilldawn.org.uk. Or if you Google Keith Mann, I think I'll come up at the top of that list, and it will take you to the website. But it is available online. ISBN. Yes, and it's very popular and selling very well. And it's really the only book that tells the true story. Inside a view of the growth of the animal liberation movement. We've never had our story on told before. It gets told by the media, and which that's distorted. So here it is.
Oh, you got it.
600 and so many pages full of photographs, and it is a very powerful story that needed to be told. And they gave me a long prison sentence. It gave me the opportunity to write the book.
Yeah. So it was good for something. I mean, I read on your website that the idea came about, like, you know, that people sort of, you know, sort of asked you all these questions. Usually what I find personally, I find writing quite therapeutic. But you know what they say, there's a book in all of us?
Yes.
Looking back on your experiences, it wasn't all great. You know, I mean, nobody wants to go to prison, and I'm not, you know, I mean, a lot of people see you actually as a hero, and you do have some nerves to do these things that you did. But when, you know, when you look at it, what was the worst thing that happened to you in the process of being an activist?
Well, one of the very early experiences, I mean, again, when I found this building, this network of buildings that hid all this terrible cruelty, these slaughterhouses and all that, these have had a real big impact on me very early on when I was a hunt saboteur and I experienced a hare being torn apart in front of me.
Yeah, okay.
Dogs, and seeing, and it was that the very awful screams of this animal that stuck with me, but also the mentality, the attitude of these other people who'd seen this thing happen, who were there to watch it.
Mm.
And there was no emotion. This was one of the most frightening things I ever experienced. Forget prison, that didn't scare me. It was uncomfortable at times, it was boring, this, that and the other. It's a stupid process, it doesn't make people better, it doesn't protect society. But this mentality to see these people have no negative reaction to this violent death, that stuck with me, that really resonated deep within me, and I've seen it so many times since.
Mm. And it goes on. I mean, to be quite honest, I mean, the way I see it, really, once you become an activist, this is not something you do for 3 years and then say, I did this for a while. Because, you know, for animals, everything takes longer.
Sure.
So you will be doing this forever.
Absolutely.
which again, look, like, you know, I mean, it is something that apparently, you know, is still fulfilling and rewarding, because I mean, believe it or not, you do make a difference. The you know, when a lot of people, when you sort of do research, do not necessarily say to me like, oh yes, ask him how it was in prison and all the things that you would expect people sort of try to get me to ask you. A lot of people actually still think, look, you know, what happened to the animals? Is there improvement? So like you were saying, there's a big shift in consciousness. So the book, how long did it take you to write the book?
Oh, the book took forever. The book was a huge task. I had no idea when I started it. It took about 15 years in total to finish it, but I have actually told the story of the book in the book, because it was such an amazing process, because I was in prison, I ended up escaping from prison, I lost the transcripts, I got raided again, the police took it. It was a long process to get this book to completion, and it was only the second looming prison sentence that forced me to finish it. And I am very, very proud of it, and it does tell a very important story that everybody should be aware of. This, what we're doing to the animal kingdom, affects us all, you know, very directly in laboratories and very indirectly with this whole mentality about consuming everything that moves.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, what you just said is that you know, that the police took your script.
Several times. Yeah.
It's just amazing, isn't it?
Well, they don't. These people represent the system. The system operates in, well, it likes, it needs people to operate in ignorance. We have to exist in ignorance for the system to carry on as it does, and they don't like this kind of information becoming public for very good reasons. So it's no surprise to me that they came along as many times as they did to take it away and stop me completing the project. But
it's also, you know, it's also psychology, you know, they just say, like, you know, if he does often enough, he doesn't sit down and do it again.
Yeah, quite.
You know, so if I mean, you know, there will be a lot of, and there are a lot of youngsters out there, and so if there are critics, and there are critics, you know, even when the Animal Liberation Front, not occasionally, but very often actually, released mink into the wild, there were people from the animal movement actually against it, because when you look at it, there's no solution to this. You can either set them free, or you keep them where they are, because nobody takes them in. They're wild animals.
Sure.
You know, but how do you deal with people sort of in your own ranks telling you, you know, that this is not the way to go?
Well, it's not for me. It's not for them to tell me. These are animals in cages. They need to tell these animals they should stay in the cages. I don't have. They don't cause any kind of obstruction to me. Those kind of people, as they do exist, and the sadness is that they're scared of what other people are going to say and going to think about them. That's why they side with the media often. It's not because they've considered this thing and it's better for these mink to be in cages. That's not the reality of it at all. They're just afraid of what people are going to say about them. And this is a big problem we have in our society, is that people are constantly terrified of what other people will think.
Yeah, celebrityism has taken over. You have to look good and you have to go with the flow. There's a lot of...
Follow our conscience, not what other people say.
Exactly, yeah.
It's important if we're going to make progress. Yeah, at the end of it... This releasing mink thing has been awesome all over the world for many mink, for many individual animals, but it's had a big impact on the industry as well. It doesn't exist in this country anymore. There are no fur farms. I know there are moves now to do the same in Ireland.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, finally we get the fur farming sort of fizzled out. I mean, it will take us 3 years apparently, but it will be stopped. And I remember, for the last 7 years. We're promoting this, and this show is only 2 years old, you know. And it's really interesting that in Ireland there's only 6 families, 120 people in all, that live or that are the fur industry.
Sure.
And it took us ages, you know, and activists ages to get the government to make changes there. Because, you know, what they would say, for instance, would be like, yeah, you know, how about these people? They never find work again. And I have a friend here from the National Animal Rights Association, and she always does that because I'm German. But she's actually right. She says to me, look, when the Jews got liberated, you know, and the people sort of, you know, the guards that didn't get executed, they were forced to find another job, and they did survive.
Of course.
So it remains difficult. Do you have any advice for people that say, look, you know, I would like to become an activist, just to know what to do. Is it a good way these days to just do, have a poster in your hand and walk around town? What's a good way to get your point across, you reckon?
Well, it's down to individual preference, really, and whatever people are most comfortable with. For many years, I was comfortable wearing a balaclava, creeping around in the dead of night. Not everybody is. Now, I will do exactly that. I will take leaflets out with me everywhere I go. If I park the car, I'll put leaflets on a few of the cars around me. It's about educating people, about giving out this information that we have access to, that other people don't, that will be beneficial to them and to the bigger picture, to the animal kingdom. Whatever it is that you're comfortable with, you should do, but you should do it as often as possible.
Yeah. Do you go into schools and stuff? I mean, I guess not, but... you know, do you give talks in libraries? Are they open enough to even let you try that kind of stuff?
Oh yeah, some are. And once they realise that we're not two-headed monsters, it becomes very easy. It has been a battle to get into some schools because they believe the media that we're monsters, we're terrorists.
Absolutely.
We
yeah.
eat children and we dig up old ladies. But the reality is very different. And once these institutions discover that, they realise that there's a very valuable debate to have here, very interesting debates, information, you know, it's a good information exchange opportunity. We call back regularly.
And also, you know, it gets them people.
It is happening more and more now, we're breaking down those barriers.
You probably don't want to be harassed by people, but is there a way for people, I was sort of fortunate enough to track you down via Facebook, and I'm glad you sort of agreed to do the interview. What's the regular way for people to get in touch with you if they wanted to?
Well, through the book website. We've recently rebuilt the site after it was sabotaged. It's back up now and it promotes the book, and Behind the Mask, which is a very powerful documentary that tells the story of the Animal Liberation Front. It's an honest look at the way this organisation operates and why it does. But if you Google Keith Mann or From Dusk Till Dawn, I know you say you couldn't find the book, but Google Keith Mann, you find the website, and there is an email address for contact there on the website.
Perfect. Okay, Keith, it was a pleasure talking to you. I wish you all the best, and I know you don't like to hear that stuff, but to many of us activists, you really are a hero.
Cool.
So
I same with everybody that's out there standing up, speaking up for the weak and the innocent.
No, I really mean, a lot of people that go through the system do not come out the other end and continue.
Many do, and I'll be here for the duration. They'll have to take me out in a coffin before I stop.
All right, Keith, thank you so much for talking to us.
My pleasure, Thomas.
Thanks, bye-bye now.
Bye.